when all that you see
are actors on your television singing off key.
What savvy, well-versed heroes can settle the
score
once more with TV. Welcome, Michaels and Scotts, to Once More with TV, a podcast celebrating TV musical episodes from the sublime to the subprime.
And definitively ranking them using every theater child's worst nightmare, math.
I'm your co-host, Alex Kovnatsky, he, him, and I am a Sweeney Todd enthusiast.
I'm your co-host, Liza Trushel, she, her, and I think Rory is the villain of Gilmore Girls.
Ooh, spicy.
I believe that.
Today we're covering The Office Season 7, Episode 3, Andy's Play, released October 7th, 2010. Liza, what is your relationship to The Office?
The Office, I believe that you mean the show that Gen Z discovered independently. It was terrifying when they did that. I watched The Office as it was coming out, I think kind of up until around this point. Mm-hmm. I got in probably around season two and stayed until Michael left. I think that's a relatively familiar trajectory for many Office fans. I was around for the Idris Elba era.
Amazing.
Between that and The Wire, I thought Idris Elba was American until like 2015. That was a wild thing to learn.
I hate it when we find out people are suddenly British. It feels like we're losing the new Revolutionary War.
All over again, the trauma. But yeah. What about you? Did you ever do The Office?
I half did The Office for my whole life, I think. You know, I watched
fair.
The when it came out, I watched it a little bit, you know, every time it was on TV, I wouldn't turn away from it. But I don't think I've ever done a full watch front to back of the show. I've just watched kind of the most famous episodes, and I think it's very funny. And I often forget that it's very funny because the fan base is so loud about how funny it is sometimes that I'm like, this can't be funny. And then I'm like, oh, no, it is a genuinely good show. But yeah, I'm not as familiar with The Office as most people are, I would say.
Yeah, I will say NBC, to a certain extent, was shoving it down people's throats. Also, in like this show was one of the first shows in my experience that was almost ruined by how much fucking merch there was. I don't know if that like makes sense to you, but like, I swear to God, just like the number of like office themed mugs and office themed all of the Dwight's bobbleheads of the world really kind of put me off the show for a little while because it almost felt ironically too corporate.
Yeah.
I was like, no, this is about a small failing business, not your multi-billion dollar business. I don't know. There was something about that for me. But anyway, yeah. And what about you declared yourself just now as a Sweeney Todd enthusiast, which is the music we're talking about today.
Yeah, I have always loved Sweeney Todd. I think of the Stephen Sondheim shows, it's probably my favorite. Actually, usually when people ask me what my favorite musical is, I either say Sweeney Todd or In the Heights. Like, those two, I think, are like the pillars of musicals for me. But I love Sweeney. I think it's a really rad show. I think the music is gorgeous. I think it's weird. I think it's weirdly like a very conventional musical in the way that it's structured and the way that the music is presented. But I think it's a very bold musical for being just like, let's do horror on stage. Let's try that.
I mean, yeah, it's a Victorian Penny Dreadful.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it is just like, it is macabre.
Uh-huh. And I think there's no greater sequence in musical theater than Pretty Women to The Epiphany to A Little Priest. I think that run is so good.
A Little Priest is an unbelievably great song.
Insane.
Not a song that we get to talk about really much this week because it wasn't in this version, but it is probably my favorite from Sweeney. It's just so, that Sondheim wordplay in there is so slick and so fun and just delightful.
What are your thoughts on Sweeney? I'd love to hear more of your take.
I'm a big fan. Yeah, it's actually not my favorite Sondheim. I think that's probably Company because I'm just that bitch, or it's Into the Woods, which I think was my first Sondheim, so it always has like a special place in my heart. But no, I mean, it's fun. It's really listenable. It's infinitely watchable. I've seen so many different versions of it. I've seen so many cool versions, so many not as good versions. Jonathan Depp. And
Jonathan.
And in terms of female roles, Mrs. Lovett, I think, is just such an unbelievably great character. Powerhouse. With such wonderful songs. And Not While I'm Around used to be one of my competition pieces back Amazing. When I was doing that. Because it's so often like kind of a pants role, because it's like right in that falsetto young boy range, or you can just get a girl. So yeah.
That's, I would love to see old clips of that. That would delight me.
I hope they've been burned from the internet, but I truly have no idea.
One way to find out, fans, get on it. Find it. But yeah, Sweeney Todd is kind of heavily featured in this episode. I'm curious to hear, you know, when I was watching it, I was thinking this like probably barely qualifies as a musical episode. What do you think about that?
It's hard because I think I was thinking about this too. And so this is one of those where what we're getting is a character who is in a musical within the world of the show. Mm-hmm. So Andy is in a regional theater production of Sweeney Todd that notably Michael Scott was not cast in after doing his monologue as an entire episode of Law and Order, which is the stinger on the episode and possibly my favorite part.
So good.
So Andy's doing it as he's playing Anthony, mm-hmm. The young man, which is also just funny because like Ed Helms is like 40.
but he looks like a young boy in that sailor outfit. Like
he's wearing the hokiest young sailor boy outfit. He walked off the set of Anything Goes onto the set of Sweeney Todd. It's 100%. What it looks like. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard because I don't think that there is a universe in which The Office could have done a musical episode where they were just singing because of the mockumentary style of it.
Sure.
They were too grounded in quote unquote reality to do that. So on the one hand, I don't necessarily fault them for that. I do think we can talk about whether or not they really committed to it. We kind of get snippets of multiple songs. We get very little actual performing. It's happening in the background of a lot of scenes. Mm-hmm. It really just feels like we wanted to, and like this show was pretty good about highlighting Ed Helms as a singer. I mean, Andy's a cappella. Oh my God, where the fuck did he go? Cornell? He went to Cornell and he's so annoying about it. Or something like that. It's like the stupidest ivy. Like the one that you don't think is an ivy.
Right. Totally.
He did a cappella there and he's super annoying about it. So he sings quite a lot on the show and it felt like, oh, let's give him something to do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of just singing in the middle of otherwise spoken scenes.
Yeah, I agree. I think this like is almost I think it still qualifies as a musical episode, especially in the format of the show. And I think especially like the first number of this episode and the last number of this episode actually feel like moments where we're highlighting the music, but other parts of it just feel like snippets of songs from Sweeney Todd that, you know, we kind of have in the background. But it still counts and I still like it.
Yeah, I mean, I still had fun. So
yeah, totally. What did you think about that opening number when they actually do the Ballad of Sweeney Todd? How'd you feel about that?
It was fun. I have my first, and this is so annoying of me, but my first thought was that Anthony doesn't sing this opening.
No, not at all. He was kind of playing the role of Sweeney in that.
A little bit. Well, I guess that like, I mean, because also when they go to do it, you see also a clip from the Ballad of Sweeney Todd in the play version on stage. And in that one, it's not sung by Andy. So you get the idea that maybe Andy, like, it's his office, so he gets to go in first and sing the opening.
Totally.
Like, that seemed like the choice.
Yeah, because I know they spread out the, like, the verses in that opening number, but the... What happens next? Well, that's the play. Is the Sweeney Rolls line?
Yeah, it's very famously Sweeney's line.
Yeah,
I'm annoying. So that was like one of my first thoughts. But it's fun. It really gave me like just cringe flashbacks to the flash mob era. Which
oh my god!
By the way, dude, I am fully afraid that it's coming back. I've seen like one or two. Yeah, I'm terrified. I've seen like multiple TikToks at this point of people like playing piano in a restaurant and then suddenly a whole table starts singing perfectly and they're like, I didn't even know they were here. And I'm like, no. We're so close. But the children don't remember. And if we don't learn our history, we are doomed to repeat it. Children.
Yeah.
Children, don't do this. Anyway.
Listen, I'll keep an open mind to it. Maybe they'll perfect it. Maybe they'll find a way to make it not cringe, but I think that's a tall order.
I think that's nigh impossible. I know that the children are our future, but some things are better left in the past. But yeah, it gave me some flashbacks to that. I loved... This is really like the show that launched Ellie Kemper, and she does that like dumb shit so well. I think it's, sometimes it takes a really smart actor to play that dumb that engagingly, and her asking, "Did you write this?" like really got me.
I think that was kind of brilliant how they used this song, because there is so much space in between the verses, and they filled it with really good gags, like the "Did you write this?" or Dwight with his knife, like pulling it out.
Dwight with his knife is me if people start flash mobbing around me again.
Incredible. Yeah, I almost feel bad that I really liked this number so much, because I feel like it set a really high bar for the episode, and then we really don't have anything like that for the rest of the episode.
100%, yeah.
But
that felt like the only time that we like fully went in, like, we're going to incorporate our cast, like, we're going to do it. We're going to take our regular set and put music in it.
Totally.
So, yeah, it was a fun open.
I also love the gimmick of this episode is like multiple people thinking they can win back their partners by taking them to a musical. Hilarious idea that has never worked and doesn't really work in this episode either.
But Andy claims that women cannot resist a man singing show tunes. And neither can most men.
I don't know, Liza. Is that true? I don't think it's true from my lived experience.
I think it's true if it's errant fate, but I argue that he could probably do almost anything and people would still fall over themselves.
Yeah. One of my favorite gags after that is Andy saying that it's an hour and 45 production.
Oh my God.
It's like, no
this
way.
This famously fucking like 3-hour show.
And they have an intermission later. There's no, absolutely no way.
There's absolutely no way. Because also when Ryan shows Kelly the time, which is like, because he's the worst person on earth, both on an iPad and analog, what a dick. But anyway, when he shows that time, it's already like 10 something.
Yeah.
And the show started at 8. And they're still at Joanna. So we're in act 1.
Insane. I like the idea that Andy doesn't actually know how long the production is at all and just said a number.
Yeah. It's like very typical of actors to throw in a number anywhere between an hour and a half to 2 hours and be like, it's probably somewhere in there.
But yeah, the rest of the episode kind of is just people reacting to going to this show or not. Eventually, pretty much everyone goes, which is, I guess, great for Andy, except for Aaron, who is babysitting Jim and Pam's daughter. I was also reminded again that, like, every time Jim talks, I'm like, dude, you're kind of a dick. Like, I remember you being funny, but I don't feel like you're funny anymore.
I think he came at, like, this really pivotal time for white boys next door on television where I think, like, because he was kind of wry and because he would look at the camera and stuff, like, he was so, and he's John Krasinski, so he's attractive, but he's not like ruggedly attractive.
Yeah, he's not out kind of your league kind of thing.
He's like accessible, and I think he kind of, like, a lot of things that are objectively dickish sort of at the time were construed as like, oh, he's such a scamp,
or totally.
Like, he's just being Jim, he's just being a guy. Like, there was, I don't know, this is something that in the, I could talk for literal ages about the evolution of like white men we're supposed to be in love with on TV that I'm not in love with. I mean, he's nowhere near a Xander Harris or a Ted Mosby, but there are moments with Jim where I'm like, okay, you can back off a little.
Yeah. It just seemed like he's like no butting every situation, like the complete antithesis of a yes and. I do, this is completely random, but I do love when Dwight says, I'll go to your show, but I'm not wearing a cape. I don't know if that's a reference to anything.
I don't either, but I laughed so hard. It's such a wild thing.
Yeah. Does he like think you have to wear capes to go to a show?
I don't know. I have no idea, but maybe we should all wear capes to shows.
Yeah, maybe. I would show up to the theater in a cape. No, I wouldn't. Maybe I would. I don't know. It sounds Superman uncomfortable.
Cape. That's like the only cape I'm going to find.
It sounds uncomfortable. And then you have to like sit on it. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, God. Imagine.
Or do you just like twist it around and use it as like a really big bib?
For you know, your theater snacks.
Ooh. You mentioned it earlier, but Michael auditioned for this, the role of Sweeney Todd by doing a whole episode of Law and Order, which we get the stinger for.
Iconic.
I loved every scene that Michael was in, which I think is generally the case for The Office. Mm-hmm. But it was nice to see, I guess because we're like further on in the seasons of The Office, it's nice to see him being a supportive role as well, too, which I think is the evolution of his character, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, as supportive as Michael Scott can be, which right. is not that supportive by any other metric. Yeah, so he asks when the cast list went up and if he's in it when they come perform, which is absolutely excruciating to watch. And then he doesn't want to go to the show until Andy claims that they like brought in a semi-professional to play Sweeney. Daryl mm-hmm. reveals that it was his plumber, which makes Michael really mad. But Michael brings balloons to the show. Absolutely
insane.
Insane. And also at intermission, he steals a whole bottle of wine, which he then drops and it like rolls
oh my God.
Forever. In like the most, that was so difficult to watch that scene. I don't do well with secondhand embarrassment on television.
Yeah.
And I was absolutely watching it like through my fingers as though it was a horror movie.
They did that so well. I think if this episode did anything well, it is that whole sequence of the cell phone going off and Andy trying to like be like a bird in my pocket, I've killed it, like you Sweeney, is so
only
good.
I don't know you're a murderer yet. It was horrible. It's very classic, like Andy always trying to get in on the joke and one up it, and always failing to do that, like
yeah.
Oh,
and it's so
God.
Great because that Sweeney has like a Patti LuPone moment of like stopping the show to harangue someone for their cell phone going off. And it just builds, like you were saying, the bottle falling on the floor, the balloons popping. I think it's an incredible sequence. I hated every second of it. It's so good.
It's so horrible. It's the worst. It's a series of the worst things could possibly happen in a show, and things you didn't even think of, like someone bringing balloons.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely, anyone who's ever been on stage, I think especially, is just like shitting bricks watching
oh, yeah.
that. I
mean, we've all had that moment where somebody tries to save a scene where something has gone wrong, where a prop is missing or something like that. And it is the most like pit of your stomach awful feeling. And I was taken right back to there.
Yeah, it was absolutely torture to watch. Extremely yeah. successful.
Extremely successful,
way.
Yeah.
My favorite goof maybe was when Daryl is shushing Michael at the top yes. of the show to say, if we don't listen to the overture, we won't recognize the musical themes when they return later. And I'm like,
Craig Robinson,
a man after
a
my
gift.
Own heart.
A fucking gift.
He is. He's so wonderful. He does that deadpan so successfully on this show, full of wild cards. I think mm-hmm. so much more successfully than Jim is doing it mm-hmm, for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually trust Daryl as a voice of reason.
No, but that quote, I have that written down too, is I think my favorite part of the whole thing. It's so good.
It really got me. It really got me.
We should talk about the performances a little bit too. I found Andy to be very good. He sounds great. I think everybody kind of did the Sweeney Todd vibrato thing right. Like, the whole ensemble was pretty good. Mm-hmm. I do love how much Dwight is proud of him.
It was really sweet, actually. It was really sweet. He leads over to his seat partner, and he's like, I work with him. He's a terrible salesman. And it's like, again, like, the bar for Dwight being supportive is in hell. I mean, mm-hmm. he never is. So it was kind of really sweet to see him take some secondhand pride in someone.
Totally.
Especially Andy, who he notably dislikes so much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was really sweet. It was really sweet. And I think both the performances and the reaction to it being like, oh, that was pretty good. It, like, did feel like a good community theater performance. And I'm kind of glad they went in that direction, because I think oftentimes we love to, like, shit on community musical theater. But, like, I think oftentimes I go to it going, oh, that was actually pretty good. There's definitely times where I go to it and it's not the case, but... it was nice.
No, you're 100% right. I totally agree. Because I think the vocal performances were good, but importantly to me, they weren't great. Yes. Like, these are clearly regional theater, like, kind of vocals. We haven't done a lot of producing to them. Like, we haven't gone in and auto-tuned anyone, at least to my ear, mm-hmm. Which I appreciate. Like, you know, like, these aren't, like, Broadway professionals that were flown in to do this, mm-hmm. as Andy has claimed. This is a plumber, and these are the people in your town. And I think that made it feel a lot more authentic and honestly watchable for this mm-hmm. this particular scenario. Because, like, yeah, Ed Helms is a great singer. He's not 100% suited to this music. Like, mm-hmm. he sounds better later when they do... what is the name of that song? Is it Stumble?
Do I Try? Macy Gray, yeah.
Do I Try by Macy Gray, thank you. He sounds better on that. Like, that's sort of more... it feels like in his wheelhouse to me, anyway. Mm-hmm. But, like, he's a... you know, he's a very talented singer. We all remember What Do Tigers Dream Of?
Yes.
A composer in his own right. but yeah, it felt nice. It felt kind of lived in, yeah. which I liked. And also, like, their makeup's bad and the costumes, mm-hmm. again, he's wearing, like, a stupid anything goes costumes. Like, I just, I really enjoyed the rough and ready elements of it that felt kind of authentic to me.
Exactly. Like, even though we were saying that this episode doesn't feel like it commits to, like, the format of a musical episode, I think it really commits to what community theater looks and feels like. And I think that is really important and good that they did that.
Yeah, I thought it was nice.
You mentioned the I Try bit. I do like Andy on that, but I do like him for being... exactly what a musical theater kid would sound like singing that
song.
Oh,
too many riffs.
I think that's perfect.
Oh my god, I'm not justifying the number of riffs. It's horrible. But it's what that character would do, so it's fine. And also, it's things Ed Helms is capable of. He's doing too many riffs. He's straight up obnoxious, but Andy is obnoxious.
Yeah, we know and this. I love that they found, you know, like, a very popular soulful song and stripped all of the soul from it completely.
Oh my god, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's very funny. It works.
Yeah, it works very well. There was a moment that I don't know why it reminded me of you, Liza, but when Craig Robinson is booing at Michael Scott and they cut away to Michael being like, I didn't like that at all. I feel like that was the most Liza reaction I could think of.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be mad, but you're right. That is exactly...
I also, just shouting out another goof, love Dwight saying all the singing got in the way of some perfectly good murders. That's a great line for him.
It is. Yeah, it is. Oh my god, there's one thing I want to talk about before we move on.
Please.
Creed doing a review of the show. I screamed. That was like... he said something about it's a ham-fisted production with horrible vocal performance. He's just like, he's doing some horrible pan of it into his phone, like, dictating.
Totally. Totally. And, like, surely he's not a theater reviewer. You don't go to the last showing. You go to previews, right? Like, that is so funny to me.
There's,
I don't know what it's for.
There's a whole goof at one point where Creed, barely knows how to work the internet. So Ryan, made him a fake website to post things on because nobody will ever see it that way. It's just, a Word document. It's in-universe that Creed, is extremely technologically, impaired. So...
So this is just for himself.
This is for him. This is so that he can read it back later.
I think it's important that we do talk about the Law and Order monologue that Michael does at the end, because it is, wow. I'm just going to set you up with that, Liza.
I was waiting because the thing about Law and Order is, how do you say that? How do you do that? Because that sound is so complicated. I watched a YouTube video on what it was once, and it's it's a crazy overlay of 9 different sounds to create that
9
iconic...
different gavels.
Yeah, it's wild how they made that sound. So him just screaming really got me. I really lost it. It also made me think about how, since I was moving to the UK, I did my due research and watched Law and Order UK a little bit. It's
no
not that good.
No way, that's a real thing.
It exists. But the thing about it is, instead of district attorneys, they say crown prosecutors. And I think it's much funnier, to be honest. They also wear tiny wigs when they go to court.
Oh, no.
Because they're barristers. And so they wear their little George Washington wigs.
That's crazy to me.
Only they would not call them George Washington wigs, obviously.
Right, obviously. They'd call them Benedict Arnold wigs, right?
Something like that. But yeah, no. I mean, it was really... wild. It's almost 100% just improvised by Steve Carell, right?
And it's incredible that those casting directors did not cut him off until so long into it.
Yeah, the idea that you would let him do 42 minutes of that is insane.
If I was auditioning people and he was my last audition for the day, I would be like, no, don't cut him off yet. Let's see how far he goes with this.
That has to be what it was, right? It has to have been a cattle call. He has to have been the last person that they let in. And there's how long can he go?
Also, the idea of him, back to the beginning of the episode, the idea of him being like, oh, so what part am I? It's tonight? What role am I? It's crazy.
Terrifying.
And we all know someone like that. But yeah, I feel like I'm ready to score this thing. I don't really have any more last thoughts that we can't get into with our scoring.
No, let's get into the scores.
All right, we're going to score this guy. We have a general vibe category coming up first. Just a quick reminder, that's how much we enjoyed it. That's how it's aged. Anything problematic? Is it good?
Yeah, generally it's pretty good. I say vibe for this are relatively high for me. Again, I think the overall sometimes disappointment that we aren't engaging with the music a little bit more, especially on a show I like this much, takes away from it slightly. But also, this is The Office, you know, so.
Yeah, I had fun the whole time. I think, like you were saying, there's so much of the episode that has nothing to do with the musical that takes me out of it a little bit. But I think generally speaking, I had a good time and it certainly didn't age poorly.
100%.
Yeah, I'm feeling like an 8.
Yeah, 8 sounds right.
All right, cool. Next, we have the music. Obviously, this is all music from Sweeney Todd and Macy Gray, respectively.
Two of our most respected composers, Stephen Sondheim and Macy. Honestly, would go to that concert.
Two. Yeah.
Would go to that retrospective. Fascinating.
There's not a lot of music in it. The music that they do have is obviously all from Sweeney Todd or from Macy Gray, so not anything original. Yeah, I think it's fine. I don't really see it scoring highly. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, for me, generally, if we're looking at found music, I'm not going to put it over much a 5. That's pretty much the best you can do at that point for me. The orchestrations are pretty straight up. I mean, the Macy Gray one's just Craig Robinson on piano, and the Sweeney Todd one, part of it's off a boombox of a backing track. And then, yeah, we're not doing anything in particular with it.
Yeah, there's no positives and no negatives, really, so it kind of ends up being pretty middling.
Super neutral.
I might put it as like a 3, just because they don't really do much with it, but I'm very open for that score to be higher.
I think it's a 4. I don't know why. Okay. I can't give you a reason, but 3 feels too low. So let's do 4.
It does feel too low, right? It feels kind of aggressive. And there are ways they could have taken the music and rearranged it and made it awful. And they didn't do that. So I kind of want to give them props for that on
some
level.
We've seen people do that. Oh, we know that that's possible.
Yes, absolutely.
Looking at you, Grey's Anatomy. Anyway.
lyrics. Obviously not much to say about lyrics either. This is about the same. I applaud them for doing Sweeney Todd lyrics and getting those, you know, words out for some of the harder ones, but
it's tricky. I think it's probably about, to me, the only thing to consider here really is whether or not we think the lyrics have anything to do with what's happening with the characters. And to me, that's kind of where it loses points, is I don't think that at any point these songs move any character journeys along.
Totally. There could be an argument made for I Try being a song about Andy trying to get back together with his ex and stumbling along the way as he does, but I don't think that is a one-to-one connection. I also don't think she's there in that...
She's scene. Not. So, I mean, I don't know that that's, I don't think it's something they were going for, but it's still something I would have appreciated.
Yeah. So maybe a 3 for that one, maybe a little bit lower.
Feels a bit mean, but yeah.
Dancing. There's not much of it. There is the sequence in the beginning.
To be fair, Sweeney Todd's not a dancing show.
It's not a dance show, for sure.
Which is part of why I've always felt welcome in it. I'm a terrible dancer.
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
Goth non-dancers everywhere rejoice when this musical comes up.
There's not much to go off of. They do have some dancing and movement in the first number, and they're walking around desks and stuff. So that's a bit of fun choreography, I guess. It's not very memorable is the problem for me.
Yeah, I think it's... I'm trying to think if I have anything to add to what you said. And I feel like, no.
It's sub-5 for me, but I don't know if it's really below 5 by a lot.
I think it's another 4. I think we're just talking about kind of skating by. I feel very neutrally about it. To me, that feels like a 4.
Yeah, I think that's right. Performance. These are the vocal performances and acting performances. Obviously, you got a lot of great actors in this show. And of the singing, we thought it was pretty good, and especially good for what they're trying to portray. Any thoughts there?
I mean, The Office, part of the success of The Office is that that original casting was so unbelievably genius. And it is a lot of really talented folks running around. I think you sometimes... Part of the shame for me sometimes in dismissing the show is that I forget, like... that there is a sort of magic that happens when there are that many unbelievably funny people and nobody's dropping a beat. And that is really hard to do. And like, sometimes I get annoyed when shows run for 100 years because I'm like, just give me another show. But you do sometimes when you revisit The Office, at least for me, I'm like, damn, these guys were all really good.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. I am delighted whenever anyone's on screen. I mean, I could have done with a lot more Kelly Kapoor, but...
Oh, always.
this is pretty high for me.
We could also have done with a lot more musical numbers, or not even musical numbers, but like longer segments of singing to really
100%,
calculate that. Because
I think
one
part
end,
of the problem there is that we're not using anybody but Andy in the show.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's
part of it for me, is like we haven't incorporated the rest of the cast at all. And not that I really think most of the cast are singers, although I think Steve Carell can sing. I might just be making that up.
I believe it. I can see it.
I don't know if I'm thinking of Stephen Colbert.
I think Stephen Colbert can sing. I think
Stephen
that's
Colbert
canon.
Can. I know that for sure. I just don't know if I'm conflating Steve Carell.
It's possible.
Anyway, part of it is that we've only put Andy in the show, which I think that maybe we don't have anybody else who wants to or really can see. Maybe it doesn't make sense for any other characters to really be in the show. I mean, to be fair, if, like, Stanley was in the show, I'd be like, excuse you?
Yeah, it would be a little bit weird.
It'd be really weird. So, you know,
Yeah, so I feel like a 7 or an 8 is appropriate for this because I think they do their jobs well. I think Sondheim is hard to sing, but they also didn't have a lot to do.
Yeah, I'd give it a 7. I think 7 sounds right.
Yeah. Okay, the writing of the show. I thought the writing was pretty solid. What were your thoughts?
It's pretty solid. I don't think that there's any time when you really, they lose you. I think the pacing and the rhythm of the show is quite good. We've got multiple storylines going on. But again, like, as you noted, they've all got a similar theme of like trying to win back lovers in some way or another, whether we're taking them to a show or like whatever Angela's doing. Yeah. We did not talk about that, but it is so wild.
It's weird.
It's so weird. When Dwight like says, "You look like you're why are you dressed like the front of a Seed catalog?" I did laugh.
Yeah, and then is clearly so into it
too. So clearly that is exactly his king, is a woman on the cover of a Seed catalog. But no, I mean, like, it is funny. I mean, it is,
it's super funny. Like, the jokes were consistently landing. There were few jokes that didn't land for me. So I think overall the writing's good. I do think they didn't really incorporate a lot of musicalness into it, which I have to think that comes at a cost a little bit to the writing, because so much of the difficulty of writing a musical episode is how do you incorporate the musical aspects into it. But I think it's still probably
also
like an 8 or 9
what
to
is
me.
Arguably, yeah, I think I agree in terms of score. I think also, arguably, this is a really funny show. Like, yeah. I don't think they mind the show for any of the humor that's in it. Like, a little bit of more of A Little Priest or something. Like, there's a lot of humor in the show.
Yeah.
Which I don't feel like you get. Like, you do get a clip of By the Sea, but since you're not looking at Mrs. Lovett and seeing how little Sweeney is responding, you're looking at our cast as they just look, they watch the show. You lose the humor in that song.
That's true. It was curious to see what songs they picked. Obviously, Joanna makes sense because you want Andy to sing. But then we see the ballad again, and then we see By the Sea. And it does feel kind of like, okay, why do we choose these? But yeah, I still feel an 8 or a 9 is pretty fair.
Yeah, I still think an 8 or a 9. Let's give it an 8.5. Are we allowed to do that?
It's our show. We can do whatever we want.
That is so thrilling.
8.5, baby. let's talk about direction. Obviously, they use the same kind of direction that they always use for this. But yeah, anything that you picked out that was particularly interesting for you, Liza?
Repeating myself, I do think it was a poor choice to show everyone else during By the Sea. I think you lose what's funny about the song By the Sea.
Yeah.
Because it sounds too earnest. And the whole point is that, you know, she is singing to a brick wall. So yes. I do kind of wish, actually, occasionally that the direction or even the editing had focused more on the play and less on the people watching it. But otherwise, yeah, this is really, they had to keep in their filmic language because it's so integral to what the show is. So I wasn't expecting them to do anything like really different. I think the first, again, that opening sequence is probably the most compelling part. But I like kind of how it seems to catch the cameras almost like a little off guard. Like, I kind of thought that was, I thought that was pretty cleverly done.
Totally. And I think, too, it's so hard to film people on stage. I feel like
it's
looks bad.
It always looks terrible.
But it wasn't jarring for me at all in this. It seemed, like, pretty seamless. And again, that one sequence where everything is going wrong is so good. The amount of time that they hold on people before cutting to something else, I think is quite
the amount of time
good.
Like holding on Michael as you hear the wine bottle roll is perfect.
Do we give this one an 8.5 as well?
Yeah, I think we do.
There we go, evens our number out. Okay, commitment. How much did it commit to a musical? Obviously, we talked about this a little bit, and it's an interesting one because it doesn't really commit to a musical episode, but it does commit to portraying community theater. What are your thoughts, Liza?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard because there's only so much. Again, like, certain shows really can't do, like, a true blue musical episode. Like, some shows, that's really not possible. And I would argue that The Office is one of them. Like, because of their entire premise, they cannot break it so dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling maybe a 6 or a 7. Mm-hmm. I think it does not really feel like a musical episode. And I think that takes significant points
away. It feels like an episode featuring music.
Yes, 100%.
And I think that goes a lot to, like, this music does not feed into any character journeys at all for me. I think that's a huge part of the commitment score.
Yeah.
And I don't think the music moves anyone along in any way.
Yep, that's 100% true. I want to lean it just a little bit positively just because I think like you were saying, it's hard to do a full musical episode for this kind of show. And I think they do something. But it's still going to be pretty close to 5 for me.
Yeah, I'm thinking like a 6.
Let's give it a 6. That's
where I'm landing. Okay.
Yeah. All right. The stakes of this episode. Does it change the game for any characters? Does it set up arcs? Can people skip this episode?
I mean, like, you know, this is a 20-minute comedy sitcom, so things don't change too much. But The Office is notably not like a Simpsons or something like that where we reset to 0. Yeah. We do have continuing through lines, and I do think a few of them move forward a little bit here. Like Andy and Aaron seem to have a moment where they almost reconnect, and Angela's seduction of Dwight is extremely successful.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a no stakes game. I don't think it's particularly high stakes, but.
And we do see Michael Scott being a little, like, a smidgen of selfless by showing up to the show, and also the speech at the end that he gives to Andy, which is, like, pretty nice. In the nicest way that he can be. I don't know the show well enough to know if that is, like, a thing that constantly happens with Michael Scott, but it was a nice moment, at least for me to watch.
Yeah, there were nice character moments. So it's not a zero-sum game, but it's not particularly high either. This is somewhere mid-high for me. This is a 6 or a 7. 6.
Yeah, I'm feeling a 6 as well for this. Okay, and last but not least, our personal ranking of the episode. Overall, how did we feel as a musical episode? We'll average those scores. Any last thoughts to make before you give your personal ranking, Liza?
I think I've said everything I need to say. You know?
I think so, too.
Mm-hmm.
You want to count us down?
All right. 3, 2, 1, 7. 7. Ooh!
Whoa! Nice! We should host a podcast together. Okay, so to recap the scores, that puts Andy's play at 62 points. We now officially have a top 5.
Wow, that's exciting.
We got Once More with Feeling at number 1, of course, with 97 points. We have Subspace Rhapsody, the Star Trek episode at 83.5. Scrubs Is My Musical at 79 points. Andy's Play at 62. And My Fair Laddie bringing up the rear at 54.
Wow, wow. Well, we'll see who's in the top 5 after next week. I mean, now there's going to be some real competition. But next week's episode, we'll see you once more with an episode from season 4 of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, entitled Pinkie Pride.
You can find this episode on Netflix and Hulu. The episodes are different numbers on these streaming sites, though, so just search for the show title.
Thank you again to Olivia Berslavsky, our angelic audio architect, and to Sakana Powell, our debonair digital designer.
If you like this show, please be sure to rate and review us. If you don't, keep it to yourself. You can find us on Instagram at Once More With TV or contact us using the information in the show notes. And
scene.